Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. 20 years ago, a stranger walked into the Augustana Archaeology Laboratory. Adrian Hannes is director of the lab. He shook hands with the man, whose name turned out to be David Jones, and the two men began a conversation. Their ensuing friendship lasted for decades until Jones died while on a paleontology dig in Wyoming. What happened next was a surprise to Hannes and to the Augustana community. Adrian Hannes joins me now in the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls. Hey, thanks for coming back.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much for having me.
So this is a pretty compelling story that ends with $1 million gift.
Right, which is one of the most amazing things that's happened in my life, for sure. It's, I guess it, as I had indicated in a couple of other conversations I've had about this, it just does point up to me how not turning your back on people or not, you know, trying to judge somebody as far as what they may or may not represent. And we certainly have quite a few people wandering in and out of the archaeology lab, have had over the years, bringing in specimens to look at and so on. And some days, I suppose, you start thinking to yourself, well, you know, I'm about ready to run out the door myself because of the... But it really, we certainly have heard a lot of very interesting stories over the years and have met a lot of very interesting people. And certainly David was one of those people. But it was a situation where, again, there was no way for me to even begin to guess what his true background was. Right. You know, was.
Take me back to that first day when he walked in, introduced himself. Why did he say he was there?
Actually, he said that he was interested in paleontology, that he also spent a good deal of his time making molds and then casts of fossils. And he said he actually lived in Worthington and would come to Sioux Falls every month or two to buy casting plaster for his mold making. But he said he had noticed, you know, our lab and had an interest also in archaeology and just field work generally. And so we visited, and it was pretty obvious that he had, I mean, right away we had some maps that were laying out on one of our map cases, and he started commenting on the geologic aspects of these maps. Happened to be of the Badlands, coincidentally, which was an area that he was really intimately familiar with. And so it was immediately evident that he, even though he said he was just a avocational person, it was evident that he had real depth of knowledge about what he was talking about. So I don't do dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. So that sometimes we get a lot of fossils brought in, and I a lot of times really have some degree of difficulty identifying them. So in any case, so we sat and visited, as I remember this, you know, for a while, and he just said that he'd stop by again, and then he did sort of begin stopping by from time to time. He'd either phone and say he was coming over, would I be around, or he'd drop us a postcard, or he'd write me a letter and say, well, I'll be in Sioux Falls, you know, next Thursday, can we get together? And after a while, it kind of went from his coming frequently, sort of late in the morning. It seemed like it'd be more logical to go to lunch than just keep drinking tea. So we started going to lunch, and he particularly liked Mexican food, so we frequented the Inca here in town. And so again, it was just something that he was a fairly, you know, person who didn't reveal a lot about himself. And I don't know, I never felt particularly like I wanted to start pumping him for all kinds of information.
Right, yeah.
So we mostly, truly, just visited about what we do and what. And he did tell me, though, early on that he had spent many years of his life working with the Boy Scouts down in Yankton. And every summer he would go down and help the scouts with their merit badges in paleontology and in astronomy. And I think in the end he had did that for about 40 years. So he really was dedicated to the Boy Scouts. And so after a couple of seasons of his visiting us, he started coming up to the Mitchell Prehistoric Indian Village to visit us when we were having archaeology awareness days up there sure. in the summer, and would sometimes bring some of the scouts up with him. So,
now I see you often in Sioux Falls, and you probably don't know that because I usually don't interrupt you, but you have a lot of meals with people. And every time I walk by, I say to myself, there's Adrian. I'm not going to say hi because you're deep in conversation with someone. It feels rude and intrusive. But you like spending time with people and really listening to them. And you're not often the one who's talking. You're often the one who's listening when I sort of spy on you. That sounds tiny creepy, but well, it's not that way.
Well, but actually, I mean, we in the field of anthropology would argue that it's the field that is the most holistic in the way we view the human condition. And so I'm not sure how you would view the human condition if it weren't through visiting with yeah. other folks. You know, I mean, it's really the way our ethnographic studies and so on are completely based on, you know, deep conversations, trying to gradually tease out insights into how other cultural systems work. And I keep trying to tease out something that tells me about how our cultural system works, but I'm not having much luck on that score, but in any case.
As you got to know David Jones better, what kind of man was he?
Well, I mean, again, that was really interesting. I finally, somewhere along the way, and it was several probably years into this, I finally sort of queried him a little bit about, you know, what his background was. And he said, well, that he managed farm properties, but that he had, and I think I eventually did learn that he had an undergraduate work at the University of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But that he had later, along the way, I think, gone back and taken some classes in geology, which had, you know, really spurred his interest in paleontology. And so, again, he spent a fair amount of his time each year, I guess, with some of his friends around the country, going out and puttering around in the field looking for fossils. And he also, I did come to learn, attended a number of the major conventions each year that were in the field of paleontology. And since he did this casting of fossils, he said he would take, you know, some of his casts to some of these conferences and sell them. Mm-hmm. So again, there was nothing to particularly in any way really say, well, that he was backgrounded in anything other than in some business venture originally, you know, as a farm right. manager. But
when's the first time he wrote you a check? Because he started sort of making donations.
Well, and that was interesting. pardon me. Since I said that he sometimes would drop us a note mm-hmm. that he was coming to visit, I got a letter envelope one day that was, you know, his handwriting. And so I said, well, David must be coming over to visit us. And I opened it, and it turned out to be a check to our lab for a number of $1,000, which was drafted on a stock brokerage firm. But there was a letterhead in with this of the David Jones Foundation. And so that's when I absolutely first learned that he had a foundation. And one of the people named on that letterhead was a paleontologist by the name of Mike Voorhees, who's now emeritus at the University of Nebraska. But Mike is the person that for years has been working on the Ashfall site down in Nebraska, which is a really, really important paleontologic site. And so Mike's been a friend for years. And so when I had this letterhead, I called Mike and I said, well, you know, David is somebody that's been visiting here, and I just wondered what Mike could tell me about him. And he said, not much at all. He said he was somebody that some years earlier had shown up down there at the University of Nebraska in Nebraska Hall, where the paleontologists hung out, and started, you know, visiting with them, and that David along the way had given them a little bit of funding for different projects. But Mike really didn't fill in very much information on that score. So I guess we sent David a thank you letter, and then next time we got together, I mentioned something about it, and he I mean, we certainly didn't get into any great in-depth conversation, but, you know, he acknowledged that he had given us this money to help us to do whatever we might want to do. And so then I guess the second round on that was he stopped by one day, and this was in 2007 in January, and they asked Lynette in the office whether I was around to go to lunch. And she said, well, actually, I had just literally had triple heart bypass surgery, so I wasn't exactly right there right then. So he went back out to his truck, and then she said he wandered back in a little bit and handed her a check and said, well, maybe this would help make me bounce back faster or something. So but again, it was
the
just
therapeutic effect.
A therapeutic
of support,
very, yeah, right. So, but it was just, again, it was something that we still never really got into. I really didn't know how to even broach the topic of, I'm not very bad at writing grants to foundations, but I'm not any good at all in approaching individuals about gifts and so on.
Right.
It just isn't my particular talent, I guess, if that is a talent. I'm not sure it is. But
how did you find out that he had died?
That was really an unhappy story, because he and I had had lunch together just a few days before I was leaving for England, because we have this, you know, connection with the University of Exeter in the southwest of England, where we send students and they bring students over in the summer and to work at Mitchell. And so David and I had had a couple of conversations. I had finally come to believing that, well, not knowing anything about what he really had as how substantial his foundation was or exactly whether they'd even consider something like this. But I had mentioned to him that would he have any interest in the thought of a chair being endowed for the anthropology program that then could be endowed in his name. And he told me that at this particular lunch that we were having, that, well, since he knew I was leaving for England, that when I got back from England, maybe, you know, we could get together and talk about this. So I go to England, and while I'm there, my colleague gets an email from our office saying that David had just passed away. And so that was a real shock. And it really wasn't a shock, because I was thinking, there goes my conversation about endowment. It was really just a shock, because I had become really quite fond of having these lunches with David, and he had some political views that paralleled mine, and we certainly had a lot of interest in field work, and so, you know, it was just pleasant to go to lunch with him and visit with him, and so I was really quite saddened by that. But in any case, when I came back, it was probably a year or so later that talked with people in the foundation and asked whether there was any chance that David had ever mentioned our conversation about, you know, this endowed chair situation. And he had not, or they were unaware of it, although they were aware of the fact that he and I had been friends and that the foundation had given me some, you know, smaller amounts of money over the years. But in any case, I don't know, couple years after his death, when the foundation was then fully, you know, organized with after his state, I guess, was settled, I was encouraged to submit a proposal for a chair, which we did. I mean, we wrote that proposal, you know, and so eventually it turns out that we found out that we were going to receive support.
How will that financial support be used now at the archaeology lab at Augustana?
Well, actually, the way it works is, I mean, and that's an interesting situation. We have a department of anthropology, so, and there's now a major in anthropology. So this gift is actually to create an endowed chair as a faculty teaching chair in anthropology. So it will be applied to, in other words, to a faculty position, and it turns out that I've been named as a recipient of, you know, the chair to begin with. So And there are now two of us. It's myself teaching anthropology, and then also Dr. Casey Carlson, who's joined us 3 years ago. So it's two of us now that are, you know, the represent the anthropology program. And so what this really will do is, in perpetuity, secure a faculty position for the program, which is pretty exciting, because that really helps a great deal, I think, in just, in my own mind, just saying to myself, well, there is a continuation of this program, because programs in all these different colleges and universities are constantly, it doesn't matter where you are or what university or college you're talking about, you know, programs, depending on the financial conditions and so on, and depending on student enthusiasm and so on, it can, over time, a program can devolve as well as evolve. And so in this case, we're sort of in the evolving mood. So
the work goes on.
Yeah,
interesting.
Absolutely.
Adrian Hannes is professor of anthropology and director of the archaeology lab at Augustana University. Thank you so much for sharing this story with us.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you for having me, Lori.
And
I
we'll
really
see
appreciate
you.
It.
We'll see you next time.
Yeah, that will be great.